Let's go back to back. We are joined right now by a Pac-12 football analyst. But so much more than that. He is a filmmaker. But so much more than that. He is a New York Times bestselling author. He is host of the Yogi Roth Show podcast. Very, very good friend of the program. And again, does hold the honor of being the first in-studio guest on CBS Sports Network and the only man who gets his own custom greeting on this program. He is Yogi Roth. Yogi, it is early signing day. It's conference championship week. Considering everything that has happened and how many times it looked like we may never get to this spot, you know I have to ask you, Yogi, how great is ball?
Oh, brother, I love this phone call. Coming off a signing day where you get to celebrate 200-plus student-athletes achieving their dreams, talking to you, that is the definition of how great is ball. And then a title game in 2 days here in SoCal. Man, the only thing that would be better is if we were in person. So I know we can't be. So thanks for having me on.
I agree with that. I agree with that very much, and I echo that, and I appreciate you saying that, Yogi. I would imagine, and I know you've been broadcasting already today, so what has early signing day been like for you?
You know, it's been crazy, to be honest with you. This year has been really hectic because of the pandemic and obvious reasons. So if you backtrack this thing, like I get to meet all these players in the summer. Well, there was no summer. There's no Elite 11. There was no summer camps. For the players, there were no summer visits. They didn't get to go see these schools, and the coaches didn't get to go recruit them and see them in person. So it's kind of crazy because a majority of recruits are signing sight unseen, and the coaches are offering players without a senior year of one snap of film, at least here on the West Coast, for the majority of the states, other than Utah. Like, there's no Pac-12 state. Arizona, you know, a version of their teams had football, but mostly nobody did. So a lot of transfers is, I think, what I would expect in the future because nobody really knows what they're getting. But it's still a really fun day because guys are signing. Like, SC signs two quarterbacks. You know, they're really excited. Guys have dreamt about playing at that level. One had an offer a year ago, and it was Fordham. The other one had everybody. You know, that's Miller Moss and Jackson Dart, respectively. So there's a lot of great stories to go around. You know me. You know how much I love that about signing day. And our schools on the West Coast did a nice job. Like, I don't think the narrative of everybody's bolting the West Coast can ring true this year. There's still some more guys that need to announce. But overall, for the Pac-12, it was a really productive day and a lot of talent staying home and a lot of schools going out of the footprint, going into Texas, going into the Midwest and taking players out of there, out of Florida. So a lot of nice narratives, man. But in the middle of a championship week and the middle of, you know, teaching kindergarten, it's craziness. I'm surprised we didn't have a bunch of on-air interruptions from a five-year-old, but we made it through 3 hours pretty clean.
Nice. Yogi Roth is joining us. You know, to those points about where guys are ending up and why they're ending up where they're ending up, I had a conversation with Brian Kelly a few weeks back, and he was talking about the fact that one of the things that he has really embraced is not necessarily focusing on the rankings of the recruits, but rather on the fit for the program and the culture. How important is that in your mind?
I think it's everything. I mean, I'll give you a great example, right? We've talked a lot about Utah for the last couple of years on your team. Last year, they won the Pac-12 and were a win away from the CFP. Well, they're starting 22, offense and defense. Everybody was a three-star recruit at a high school except one player, and that was Jalen Johnson, who's now playing for the Bears. Just the kind of the reality of who they are and what they're about. You could say the same thing about Washington. You look at what Oregon State did this year in their win over Oregon, right? They don't have nearly the ranked guys, right? So I think that's really important. I think for coaches, this year has been about trying to figure out the intangibles about players in high school because you're getting now 90 minutes on a Zoom, right? Back in the day, which was 8-10 months ago, I couldn't get a five-star recruit to sit on a Zoom session. And you'd be lucky if you can get them to talk X's and O's for 15 minutes because everybody is trying to get him, and you're lucky if you can get to your campus. Now, nobody's got anywhere to go, right? So you can sit down with, for instance, USC and Corey Foreman. He's number one player, you could argue, in the country. He signed today. We don't know where because he won't announce until January 2nd at the All-American Bowl, but they got to present to him for multiple times for over an hour because he's got time to sit and learn. So I think for the coaches, just like Coach Kelly said, they really have dove into – who are these young men? How do they learn? How many times can I get in front of them for long periods of time? And I think that's going to be critical in terms of the evaluation. The problem is you can't really tell how they play. And most importantly, you can't tell how guys grow. So there's a lot of seniors that were 6'1", 175 last year, that are 6'3", 205, that should be signing letters of intent today and aren't. because they didn't get to play. And that part of it, that breaks my heart a little bit for a lot of these guys that I hear from around the country that signing day did not go as well as they hoped because of what's happened around the pandemic and not having football.
Right, that is heartbreaking. Yogi Roth is joining us. All right, Yogi, you mentioned USC. So USC is playing in the Pac-12 championship game Friday. They're 5-0. They've got a good look at the Pac-12 championship, yet they're ranked 13th in the college football rankings with 4 2-loss teams ahead of them. What do you make of that?
I make a lot of it, man. You know, I mean, and I've had my share of rants or intense conversations around it on the Pac-12 networks, and I have no problem having another one. Because I think the reality is, and while all of us who work in sports have tremendous respect for everybody who's hand-selected to be on the committee, but what we're struggling with is any sort of consistency around evaluation, right? So if I say body of work is what matters, which is not supposed to be the answer, but if I say it does matter, then how is Iowa State ranked where they are? How in God's green earth is Florida ranked where they are? Just as subtle examples. If I say it's about right now, which it's supposed to be, a clean slate every single week, how in God's green earth is Florida even in the top 25 based on the game and the loss against LSU? And I say that, and I'll couch it with my answer to USC, is that people can look at Florida's loss and say, well, it was a shoe that was thrown, or there was a mitigating circumstance that made it a tight game, and who knows how it could have gone. Against an LSU team that, yeah, had three wins coming in, but they're a really talented team. Okay, hit pause on that thought, and now let's cut to Utah. I just talked about them, sending boatloads of players in the NFL. Over the last 5 years, most players from this conference have gone on the offensive and defensive line. So you'd like to think there's a respect there. Maybe not a national champion respect like LSU, but a highly respectable program. Does USC get any respect for a win over them? Probably their most complete game of the season? No, because Utah was it was their first game of the year. And Utah's not a ranked team. Utah didn't win a natty last year. Does USC get credit for a win over ASU, albeit at the end, against a team that might have won the Pac-12 if they went through an entire season? No, no chance. Do they get credit over a UCLA team that sans 4 turnovers in the opener and their quarterback not getting COVID tracing? They might be undefeated right now. And the committee has said 2 weeks ago that they were a fringe top 25 team. So I say that because if you're going to take all things in consideration, USC shouldn't be ranked where they are. And unfortunately, what I hate to say is that if they were Florida and went through the same scenario, they'd probably be ranked where Florida is currently. Right? And that to me is frustrating. And to me, the committee, that's their job, is to be very clear on how they're figuring this thing out. And I get the eye test thing, but my eye test, I've been 20 years in the game, and I could bowl up on this, that when I look at the teams ranked ahead of USC, specifically Coastal Carolina or Iowa State or Florida or Georgia, I don't see teams that I'm like, yep, if they played each other 1v1, it'd be a rout. SC couldn't hang. Not at all. So my eye test doesn't necessarily match up with the committee's, which is fine, but to be as dramatic as it is, to me, screams either a lack of respect for a conference, which I think is fair to say because I think that's happening, or a lack of an understanding of a conference, which I hope is not the case, but that's what it sounds like to a certain degree when I see what's happened. So disappointed, frustrated, I think, for Pac-12 fans. I feel you and I hear you. Best case scenario, though, I think is if SC wins, that you've got yourself in pole position heading into next year. Because this conference, it's got a laundry list of All-Americans coming back next year in college football. And I think that's the harsh reality, and I think that's the truth. And I look forward to the committee giving some sort of answers around equity in college football and probably a sport that is the most inequitable sport in the history of planet Earth. So, yeah, man, I got a lot of thoughts around it. And it's frustrating. It's a bummer. And I don't think they've taken into consideration the road that SC's been on either, man, around COVID-19. It's dramatically different than Ohio State, than really anybody that's ranked ahead of USC right now regarding what you have to deal with in California. Their program wasn't even allowed in their locker room till the week of their first game or their weight room, whereas other teams are practicing in the month of September with shells on. And we're just talking about two different worlds. So in a world where the CFP could have united football and said, let's expand, they did the exact opposite and, to me, alienated a conference that I'm not saying should be top four, definitely isn't where they're ranked today heading into the final game.
Yogi, I got to say, and this is all extremely well said by you. I mean, it's one thing for Ohio State to be 5-0 and USC to be 5-0, and I'm not clear why Ohio State's number 4 and USC is number 13. And really quickly, and you just did a really good job of laying this thing out, how concerning is it when the American Conference, though, is getting more respect from the committee than the Pac-12?
It's sad, especially when the team isn't even playing, right, Cincinnati. I mean, I'd be curious, people on the committee, walking into the committee, could you even name every team in the American, let alone every coach or every coordinator, right? Like to say that the brand of that conference is bigger than the Pac-12, that to me is like a very hot take and very short-sighted. Because when I look at Stanford and Oregon and USC and UCLA and up and down this conference in Washington and teams that have won national titles in Colorado and Utah, like, come on, bro. Like, it ain't even close. But that is the truth when you look at the rankings. And that, to me, is this very – I don't know what word is, man. Like, I don't want to be – I'm not trying to be, like, the come down hard and be the guy that screams it, you know, louder from the rooftops like we hear at other networks. That's not my personality. But I do think it's important to stand up for what you think is right around the game. And the CFP doesn't want to hear it. I've asked them before. I've gone down to Dallas, and I've sat in on mock committees, and I asked Bill Hancock, do you feel like you're the president of college football? And he said, no, I don't. I feel as though my job is to run an event. Well, yeah, well, you know what? The event is presiding over all of college football. And it, to me, is running college football. And I think the dollars that are pumped into it via ESPN are running college football. I think that's just like the harsh adult room conversation. And the way that this is laid out now, in a year that has been – you know, dramatically different regarding every footprint, right? What Alabama's been able to do, what Clemson's been able to do. And then I listen to these head coaches, Dabo Sweeney or Dan Mullen, talk about, you know, it's about the games played. I think Dabo's quote was the Big Ten, and I'll loop the Pac-12 in, they chose not to play. Like, you know, the environments kind of dictate that too. Like, the local health and safety protocols of every state, right, and local community. I mean, that to me is when I hear coaches say, I'm more than a coach, and then you come out with a comment like that, I'm like, that's hard for me to swallow, because I understand, you know, what a powerhouse you are, and that comment sends reverberations down to high school coaches and around the country, and the role of the coach to me is much broader than getting to the playoff, and that's why I think the playoff had a great opportunity to unite the game, and I think it's frayed the game, and I've said that from day one. I thought it would do that, and I think this proves to be a tremendous example of why it needs to expand. We all accept that it will expand, but why didn't we do it this year? I still don't understand that.
No, right. This is the year to do that. He is a Pac-12 football analyst. He is a filmmaker. He is a New York Times bestselling author. He is a podcaster. He is a very, very good friend of the program. Yogi Roth, my man, my brother. Great job, Yogi. Always good to have you on. I appreciate the passion. You make great points, and you're right. Somebody's got to stand up for it. Great to have you, Yogi. Thanks so much.
Anytime, man. Have a great holiday.
You too. Happy holidays. Yogi, fighting the good fight.